Welcome to Ira's Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. My guest today is Richard Curtis, a literary agent, publishing authority, and passionate advocate for writers. His career has spanned the dramatic evolution of the publishing world, from traditional print to the digital revolution. He's the author of Digital Ink Period, which explores how technology, business, and law collided to reshape the way books are written, published, marketed, and read. Richard doesn't just analyze that transformation. He lived it firsthand, as I mentioned before, as a literary agent and ebook publisher. We're going to talk about how publishing has changed, where it's heading next, what authors and readers need to understand about the future of storytelling in the digital age. In his introduction, Richard says, quote, "I have set out to describe the confluence of three different cultures, technology, business, and legal," unquote, and all from his personal involvement. Digital Ink Period is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookshop.org, and all the usual places. And for everything about Richard, go to richard-curtis.com, and hyphen is not his middle name, richard-curtis.com, and follow him on Substack, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Richard, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. You obviously have the experience to write about the book. What made you decide to write the book?
Well, I started an ebook publishing company in 1998 when nobody knew what ebooks were, and there was no existing Kindle, iPod, no existing technology. But I knew the technology was coming, and I wanted to, and I had the books to feed that technology when it arrived. That's 1998. So I did it. It was successful. You all know what happened to the ebook revolution. But looking back at it, I realized that we were all transformed by a digital revolution, and we don't know quite how that happened. One day you were reading, holding a book, a paper book, a printed book, and somehow later on, you were reading a book on a screen, thumbing the changes. How did that happen? And it wasn't just the book industry, it was almost every industry. And as a result of these changes, enormous disruptions have occurred in our lifestyle, in business, in retailing, in almost every form of every function. How did that happen? How did you become a digital person? I'd like to think that my book will help you to trace your steps back to that era of basically the now fading 20th century and into today, including the transition to AI, where there are many parallels.
Mm-hmm. The irony is, though, wouldn't you say, Richard, that despite the revolution and the confluence we talked earlier about technological, business, and legal aspects to it, the irony is that the physical book remains.
The physical book has made a comeback, and the ebooks, I won't say, have disappeared, but they have faded into a more proportionate role in our society. I always felt that the reason why print books have remained so influential is because when we were children, our parents didn't want us reading ebooks. They wanted to read. Mommy and Daddy wanted to read a book to us. They wanted to hear us read a book to them. And the books they chose were not digital. They were printed books. So we've all kind of grown up the last 25 years being more familiar with print books. And we use ebooks only for certain specific activities, like travel mm-hmm. and things like that. So I think that, and by the way, in the publishing industry, the only segment of the book industry that has succeeded financially year after year has been children's books. Adult books come and go, fiction, nonfiction, various genres. They may show a profit of a few percentage points, but children's books have soared to dominate and will continue to dominate for the reasons I've given.
I think there's that human connection as well, the tactile sensation of holding a book, turning the page, touching the page, etc.
There's nothing like it. And most of the ebook advocate that I know prefer, if you ask them secretly, what do you prefer to read? Including myself.
Right.
I'll tell you, I love to settle down with what in publishing we call books as opposed to ebooks. When you talk about books, you say, well, what kind of book are you talking about? And we say, well, there's ebooks and there's books.
Right. The funny thing is, people that I've talked to who have recently donated a lot of their books, they remodeled their house. There's not a lot of room for, or they move into a smaller house or an apartment, not a lot of room for physical books. They do keep certain ones that mean something to them, or reference books or very classical books, but they do take up space. So there's an argument for the ebook, but there is, do you think, let me put it another way. I'm going in a different direction now, Rich. I was going to ask you one thing, but I like this question better. Is it the fact that there's no joy in reading an ebook as opposed to a physical book, especially if there's illustrations? And
it's not so much the joy, it's the deep investment in a book. It's very hard to read an ebook because of so many distractions, especially if you're on the kind of device that carries movies and ebooks and texts and various graphics, yeah. Then the slightest distraction will take you away from your reading. Whereas with print books, it really is more of an immersive experience. You bury yourself in it, you lose yourself in it. The book doesn't vaporize when you're through. Even though you may have little room in your apartment for printed books, they do basically express who you are. You walk into an apartment, you see a bookshelf, you look at it, and you almost immediately understand something about the person you're visiting. But ebooks, you know, we used to sit in the subway and sit next to some pretty girl and say, hey, I read that. You start a conversation because we recognize the cover. Now they're reading an ebook, you haven't the slightest idea whether they're reading a book or watching a movie or texting their friends. So
it's the product that they have rather than the content. So you see someone on, as you mentioned, the subway, I'll use that analogy. They're sitting there with either an iPhone or a MacBook or a PC or whatever. So it's the instrument, it's the mechanism, not the content that your eye goes to.
There's some content that you don't need to save, that you may not care whether it identifies you. And in fact, it might embarrass you if people knew that you're reading this ebook, you know. So it doesn't have to be displayed. And as soon as you finish reading it, it disappears at no loss to you.
Now, Richard, hang on a second. You must admit, we both could admit this, that if you want to do that with a regular book, you just put on a different book cover.
I've heard of people doing that.
Yes, I see. You don't want to admit yourself. Okay, fair enough. So, well, you know, you've had a front row seat to all of this. When did you realize that this industry was not going to ever be the same? Now, as I mentioned, we've been talking about the physical book and its appeal, but clearly there's been a revolution. When did you first discover this?
I have to tell you, right there, people have described me as a visionary, and the vision I had goes back to 1985, when I was walking down the street listening to music on my Walkman, mm-hmm. my And suddenly I had this vision that if we can listen to music on a portable device, why can't we read a book on a portable device? That was 1985, and it would be 15 years before the technology began to catch up to my particular vision. But the moment I thought about it, I realized how destructive disruptive this technology can be. Because I realized that what it will do is eliminate any agency between the creator and the reader. I write a book, I can send it directly to you. I don't need an agent. I don't need a publisher. I just go straight to you. Well, what is that going to do to my agent? What is it going to do to my publisher? What is it going to do to my bookstore? This wasn't just books, but think of all the retail stores, that the brick and mortar stores that have closed because people can now get the product directly from the manufacturer or using a very, one agent like Amazon, which is almost like pressing a server and getting your product, without any a minimum of interruption. So digital technology has erased the middleman in every transaction, whether it's books or lingerie or stockbroking or travel, travel agencies, stockbrokers. They all have been, what the word is, disintermediated by the technology. That is to say, they've been kind of demiddled. There's no middle anymore.
Richard, that's the key question. Is that good or bad?
Well, ask the guy who's just closed the store on Madison Avenue if it's good or bad.
No, I understand that, but I'm asking you from the larger sense of society. If you are eliminating a cost by eliminating the middleman, I understand the role of the middleman. I'm actually pro middleman because I do understand the concept. But does it help society mostly in the long run? Because I can order something from Amazon; it's there the next day. I don't have to drive, waste fuel.
I think most people would say it's like 50-50. There is the disadvantages that I've just described, the closures and the destruction of any middle agency, which was a kind of analog business. It was physical bookstores. Books were delivered by trucks using fossil fuel to brick and mortar stores. That's an analog experience. Whereas the convenience of digital delivery is a blessing. So, whatever you gain, you lose with the left hand, you're going to gain with the right. But we are now confronted with a new version of the digital revolution, which is AI, which is kind of digital technology on warp speed. And again, it's an enormous blessing. People who know how to use it, including myself, have benefited vastly from it, but it is also dangerous, destructive, and abusive. I, as a book person, I have to wonder what is going to happen when this generation of students right now who admit that they cheat writing papers and theses using AI, what's going to happen when they graduate and they want to become authors? they won't know how to be authors. The only authorship will be for them to press a few keys, ask AI, to, here's a good idea for a novel, write it, AI writes it, and you try to get it published, and no respectable publisher is going to want it.
Richard, don't you think, though, and I look at it more optimistically, I think that serious writers throughout the generations and centuries, there's always going to be a small percentage of people who are serious writers, and they're going to write because they want to write. They have the passion for writing, and they will write regardless of whether there's AI or not AI. At least that's my view. Do you have any sense of that being on a positive side of what you're just talking about?
Well, it's true that there are always dedicated writers. But now we have a real problem because publishers have to screen every manuscript that's submitted to them.
Correct.
Authors have to sign pledges. I hereby swear that I did not use AI to write this book. That's what's going to happen to a publishing industry that used to act on trust. If you can't, you know, if I read a book and I say, this sounds awfully suspicious, like somebody else wrote it, and no, the author is genius enough to write as brilliantly as AI might have written it, well, you know, good for the author. But if you get a whole generation of readers who say, I don't know, sounds too good to be true. And what happens to a writer who really is too good to be true?
But that's the exception to the rule, because even now there are professors that are using software to filter out those students who are using AI to write their
essays. But it's a losing proposition.
Yeah.
It's here.
Yes.
The best is that students can be taught that you can use AI to help you research, to even perhaps design a scenario for a book you're writing. But when it comes to writing, it's you, your computer, your empty room, and your imagination. And if you can't use those tools to produce a work of literature, then you'll have to find some other calling, and one that uses AI shamelessly and effectively.
There's also a downside to the digital revolution, and that is, just recently Amazon has announced that they're not going to be supporting Kindle. At least that's the general idea of it. So all of a sudden you have content you're not going to necessarily be able to access through your Kindle through Amazon, although you can, I guess, retain what you have on there. But that goes to the concept of who owns what, who controls what. If you have a physical book in your house or apartment, you own the book. If it's a digital device and you have a ebook on it, who controls that ebook? Does it disappear, as you mentioned earlier, does it just disappear at some point because some company decides it's no longer supporting it?
Or if the device itself
doesn't support it?
If you ask AI to write a novel and you somehow get it published, you can't copyright it. Laws and rules do not accept books for copyright that are not written by human beings. That means that the moment you publish your book, I can steal it and publish it on my website because you have not been able to copyright your own work. So it's kind of Wild West out there. And yes, you do own the physical book on your bookshelf, but we're talking about the artistry of writing itself. And basically, you know, thanks to digital technology, a book no sooner gets published as an ebook that pirates have stolen it because it's so easy to convert a digital file, an ebook file. I mean, you go on YouTube and you can get instructions on how to hack Amazon. I mean, so the digital technology has opened this Pandora's box of piracy and theft. And it does make you long for the era of books when, you know, when it was very hard to plagiarize a book. You had to retype it basically if you wanted to steal it. So that's the change that has bedeviled us.
We talked about the digital transformation in terms of books, and luckily they're still with us, the books, as you say. But I think it's been more devastating to the revolution, the digital revolution, to newspapers. You have newspapers that have an online presence, and that's generally more and more where they get their revenue from, but not all newspapers survive. More and more are dying, especially the print version as well. Do you see any hope for, I'll call it newspaper, like book?
I read a newspaper every morning. But I recently read in the New York Times, about the New York Times, that their business is booming, but it's all digital, and that the number of subscribers to the paper newspaper has been sharply reduced. And I just wonder, one day I'm going to open my door and look at my doorstep, and there'll be nothing there. And then I'll go online to find out what happened, and I'll discover that it was no longer worth the Times or the News or the Post to print paper anymore. It's such a stuffy old analog way of reading things.
You'll be saving some money on soap then.
I have tried reading the New York Times online, and it's certainly a well-navigated website. You can read almost the same thing, but it doesn't have the serendipity of discovering something that you were interested in that you never thought you'd be interested in, some quirky story about crazy people doing wonderful things that you won't come across in the digital version of the newspaper.
Almost a sterile read in a way.
Sterile is a very good way of putting it. You can get the news, but you won't get the emotion of the news. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there is a great satisfaction for me to open that paper, wrestle with it, trying to fold it so it doesn't crumple in my hands.
And then washing your hands after you read it. That's
exactly
what you said. So, yeah.
But the satisfaction of reading it that way and getting stories and my eye roving over little things like the weather and little cartoon illustrations and the advertising and with side stories and behind the news, all that stuff will be gone if it isn't gone already. Being a visionary and a pioneer in the digital revolution, I sometimes wonder whether I should have just kept my mouth shut and probably delayed the revolution by a year or two. It was going to happen, and I made money feeding it. Great benefit was I was able to restore the careers and the books of authors whose works were going out of print and whose careers were over, at least they thought they were over. And suddenly people were discovering their books again and writing fan mail to them and paying money to read books that were not accessible anymore in paper, but were accessible as ebooks. I'm very proud that I was able to achieve that positive effect with digital technology.
Well, last question. What do you want readers to get from reading Digital Ink, period?
I think you will, first of all, it's an adventure. It's a business story. It was a great adventure because it's a kind of a memoir of how I and a bunch of hotshots started a business when we didn't know what the hell we were doing. There was no technology to guide us. And my knowledge of the technology was kind of the equivalent of popular mechanics. So all I knew was books, but I knew that they would need books. So that's how we were able to make this happen. And I'm very proud of that achievement.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Richard Curtis. He's author of Digital Ink, period. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places, including bookshop.org. And for everything about Richard, go to richard-curtis.com, richard-curtis.com. And you can follow him on Substack, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And Richard, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks very much, Ira.
Appreciate it. Join us every Thursday for a new schmear on Ira's Everything Bagel.